I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. It's Friday. This Friday, we will do what we do every Friday next hour. We'll look at False Flag Friday and the March to World War III. They're still trying. They are really trying. I know that many things have kind of pushed the Ukraine war off to the sideline. Mainstream media loves to stick its fingers up our nose and drag us from one story to another. One overarching narrative they try to put front and center to us, but it's still going on there. A lot of tragedy is still happening in Ukraine right now. It's not going well for the Ukrainian army, regardless of all of the money and the weapons we're sending. But we are trying to turn the tide, and we are going to accelerate this until I'm sure they get the maximum messiness out of it. So we'll take a look at that and some of the warmongers on Fox News. I've got a clip of them. I love exposing Fox News. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll finish up the show as we always do with This Week on the Crazy Train. Joe Biden made a gun control pitch, apparently, to the public last night. We'll talk a little bit about that in the first hour. Got a very short clip on that. And it's also, I have a little something here on Pride Month, too. I don't know if people understand or have really considered the change of corporate America over the past decade when it comes to some of the woke stuff, and maybe there was a reason behind that. And we're going to take a look at that, too. It's not just a crisis of conscience at the mega corporation level that caused that. The timing is interesting that they started making that change. Anyway, we'll get to all that stuff on the show today. Quotes of the day today. First one is from John Kennedy. JFK said, and I think this applies to this show, conformity is the jailer of freedom and the enemy of growth. If there's one thing I cannot be accused of, that would be being a conformist. So I have thrown off the jailer of freedom and the enemy of growth in this incredibly non-conforming show, particularly even to the conservative talk radio format. And then I ran across this tweet that I thought was pretty funny. I love when people catch on to things. This is just a tweet from a woman. Suverna M is the name she goes by. She said, no one mentioned the hardest part of motherhood was going to be protecting my kids from the government. No one mentioned the hardest part of motherhood was going to be protecting my kids from the government. Well, she hasn't been listening to libertarians, because we will explain to you repeatedly, should you allow us to, should you listen, that the greatest threat to not only yourself and your children is your own government, for all of those out there that are foaming at the mouth with fears of Russia coming and taking your stuff, or China. You know, the Democrats like to blame Russia for everything. The Republicans like to blame China for everything. We need to build up a huge military and build an empire to protect us against these two nefarious countries. When all along, actually, the biggest threat to your freedom are the people that you actually vote for. I looked at cognitive dissonance a couple of days ago, ran across a quote about it, and looked at exactly what it was. It's an interesting psychological phenomenon. And basically what it is that people will hold some thought, some belief in them, and any facts or anything that contradicts what they already believe, they have to completely ignore. They have to disregard. It makes their head hurt to accept a new fact. We've seen a lot of this when it comes to masks or the vaccines, wars, just about everything. We get we get propagandized to so badly that we hold these beliefs and we just cannot accept anything outside them. It hurts our brain too much. That's why I've created a show for the independent thinker out there. I think you're an easier audience to submit new ideas to, the vast majority of people. And I would imagine people switching the dial probably stumbled across my show, but the cognitive dissonance was too tough for many people and they abandoned me. But so we looked at cognitive dissonance. There's another thing that I ran across this morning. It's an interesting psychological phenomenon. It's called normalcy bias. I am a student of human nature at this point, because as my intro says, where it quotes the, I have the clip in my intro from, was it Mugatu, the Will Ferrell character in Zoolander, where he says, is anybody else noticing this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. I have gotten to where our country, our politics, the things that go on, I feel almost like I'm at a zoo. And I'm just looking in on it, trying to figure out, you know, don't you ever look at animals in a zoo and just, you just wonder what they're thinking. You've got a gorilla sitting there and he's staring back at you or something. You just think, what goes through the mind of a gorilla or a cheetah? It doesn't matter what it is, what the animal is. We look with amazement because we just don't quite understand what they are, and something foreign to us. That's kind of how I view the world these days, is I feel like I'm looking in on a zoo, just trying to analyze exactly what I'm seeing. So I'm interested in the psychological phenomenon. This one is normalcy bias. It's defined this way. Normalcy bias is a psychological state of denial people enter in the event of a disaster, as a result of which they underestimate the possibility of the disaster actually happening and its effects on their life and property. Their denial is based on the assumption that if the disaster has not occurred until now, it will never occur. Now, I actually believe this is probably a positive self-defense mechanism that may be quite useful to human beings, to all of us. Having some level of normalcy bias is probably a good thing, because we cannot spend our entire lives, every waking moment, worrying about the worst possible outcome that could befall us. And so when things are going well, or seem to be just kind of status quo, I think a lot of people just turn off the idea that anything bad could ever happen. And we suffer from this. It leaves us with a huge blind spot. I'll put it that way. You know, Americans believe that the United States will always be on top. This is the vast majority of people. And we think we cannot fall like other countries around the world or throughout history. And this has allowed our political class to take us down almost the exact same road. There's so many parallels between what we're going through now and what happened to the Roman Empire. And make no mistake, particularly to you people on the right who have allowed and cheered for an American empire, you have actually cheered the emperor as he has talked about his military conquests around the world, and we have left ourselves as stretched. And now we're seeing the debasement of our currency, just like the Roman Empire did. And so we have a normalcy bias. I see the media, you know, I usually use this first part of the show, and this is no exception, to really kind of look at the financial forecast, where we're headed economically. People know we are suffering from inflation right now. They don't understand it, but they understand that they're paying more money than things. Elon Musk told executives the electric car maker needs to cut staff by 10% because he has a, quote, super bad feeling, unquote, about where the economy was headed. The email titled, quote, pause all hiring worldwide, unquote, was sent to executives on Thursday as the latest sign of mounting macroeconomic headwinds, as lower than expected U.S. new car sales in May could be a harbinger of a recession. And I believe we are really trapped in this normalcy bias. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't have normalcy bias. I'm almost always looking for the chaos and expecting it to a degree. It doesn't affect me on a daily basis. I still have a great time. Majority of my day is spent laughing, trying to make somebody else laugh. But my mind is open to the fact that we are setting ourselves up for some pretty, pretty ugly things going forward. And this blind spot, this acceptance, this idea that because something has not happened, a collapse of the U.S. dollar, a true currency crisis here, the real depression style, you know, the people who suffered through the depression of the 1930s are largely not with us anymore. And so we do not really have a context. Hell, they're a lot of people are talking about the fact that there are financial advisors, stockbrokers, people on Wall Street right now that within their career, they have never even seen a bear market. And this is why if you turn on to CNBC and the endless streams of people there, they just believe that the good times are just going to keep on coming. Even people in the crypto universe have basically only seen huge swings up. Now, Bitcoin has been cut in half, but it has still come from pennies just a decade or so ago up to a high of $60,000 a coin. And they just cannot imagine that this thing could actually cycle all the way back down to zero or to next to nothing. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying we don't have any context. Bitcoin people believe that because the returns have been huge over the years, maybe not on a month-to-month basis, but because this thing has just gone to the stratosphere, it will always just go to the stratosphere. It's just a matter of when and how high. It's this normalcy bias, and I'm going to be very, very interested to see. I don't know if this would really be considered normalcy bias, but I was listening to Michael Cassidy on Clay Edwards' show this morning. I've met Michael Cassidy. I've actually spent more time talking to his campaign manager, who I was very impressed with. I think he and I would share a great deal alike. He's a pretty libertarian-minded guy, and I believe Michael Cassidy certainly has his small, limited government ideas as well. But I'll be very interested to see if Michael Cassidy has a shot at unseating Michael Guest. I'm not making a prediction. I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility, but it's very interesting. Most people, we have to understand, are just not engaged. They have the normalcy bias. They believe that all they have to do is just wait till a general election and push that button next to an R or a D, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, really hard, and you've done your thing. As long as my party is in charge, everything will basically be okay. Now, when the other party takes control, it's an absolute disaster, and we can imagine only the worst. But as long as our party's in control, who the party guy is really doesn't matter. This has been the way for the longest time. I remember 160,000 people, I believe, got off the couch to go vote for Roger Wicker in a primary, and I was just scratching my head. He was going to win anyway. It wasn't contested. And I just thought to myself, what would possess 160,000 people to go vote for the completely uninspirational Roger Wicker, just Republican cutout? But they did, because people have this kind of ritual, I guess it is, just to support the party. So it's going to be very interesting to see when we get to the primary elections, if people are kind of shaking off, realizing that maybe things aren't going really well, that maybe now playtime is over, that maybe bad things really can happen if we stay on this current course, and that we need to start changing the way we do things. For the longest time, somebody like Michael Guest or Greg Harper, Thad Cochran, Roger Wicker, any Republican that got in there pretty much could serve until they decided themselves to leave. There was never a danger of them ever becoming unseated. Of course, with senators, we've had 40 years since we've had an open seat for just a primary. They do what I call the Mississippi Shuffle, and our senators resign midterm. Somebody is appointed by the governor to take their place so that they have name recognition the next time, and people just continue to keep these people in place. I'm wondering if we have broken out of that. It's going to be very interesting to see. I think it's time we should. I like Michael Guest as a person, not inspirational as any kind of a maverick in the House of Representatives, for sure. But we'll just see. Are times changing? Are people finally kind of waking up and realizing, you know, we've got to get more engaged this time around? We can't sit around and wait for 6, 12, 18, 24, 36 years of a politician's tenure in Washington, D.C. before we decide to make a change. This is what we've done for most of my adult life, is we just elect, we set them and forget them, and then complain along the way. So we'll see. Another thing, too, I heard a story this morning, unrelated. I guess I need to take a break and I'll come back. I heard a story this morning that the minor league, Mississippi Raiders? It's a new minor league football team that we've got here. Is it minor league or is it arena? I need to find out. I want to give them their due. They're trying to do a little something fun here in Mississippi, so I'll get some details on that. But they're setting up a program to provide some fun stuff or positive activities, football, and they mentioned also cheerleading, to try to get kids off the streets I guess in Jackson in particular, in light of all of the violence that we're seeing with our young kids. But it's interesting to me that there's something else that's just not ever talked about around this issue of youth crime and the problem that we're having with the kids in the inner cities, really around the country, but particularly here in Jackson, that this minor league football team is wanting to impact. There's just something that is never, ever talked about, so I'll talk about it when we get back. Stick around.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I?
You know, one of the problems that I see as an observer is the way we normalize certain things and just don't really make any attempts to change them. We'll talk about Joe Biden's gun control push after the next break. They're trying to change something by really just ignoring all reality and trying to seize total control. But so I was listening to this story this morning, and I hear all of these different things that are put out there to try to help the youth. This is nationally, you know, we've got youth crime problems. We got crime problems. I believe they are economically rooted largely. We have forced large swaths of the American population into some pretty desperate situations. And then we're surprised that crime increases, particularly in light of COVID, where we just decimated the economy. Did something really funky to the labor markets. I still really can't even figure out. I don't know where people are getting their money, that there's still people that will not take and maintain employment these days. But anyway, I was listening to this story about this minor league football team, the Mississippi Raiders, that's trying to provide some positive activities for these kids to get them off the streets. And I think that's fantastic. I hope this is done with, you know, donations or donating their time or whatever. I hope this is not another government program, because if that's the case, I can almost assure you that it will fail. But, you know, we've got kids going through schools, particularly in the Jackson area, that are emerging without basically any skills that make them prone to a life of success and stability. I'll put it that way. And one of the biggest things that I think we have really normalized, I don't hear anybody talking about it, and maybe because it's a, maybe it's a touchy subject, I don't know. But I don't know if you've noticed, you will talk to young people. I've had the opportunity over, I hate to admit it, 25 years of interviewing entry-level employees for positions, here in central Mississippi, and you will talk to these kids, they cannot communicate intelligibly. I'm talking about in the thoughts that they try to put together, but most importantly in their vernacular, in their actual speech patterns, in speaking clearly and grammatically correctly. Now, when I talk to my buddies, if I'm sitting around, I'll let some colorful language fly. I'll probably use some slang, some jokes, some, you know, I'm somebody that's got a kind of a, I can have a weird sense of humor sometimes and say inappropriate things if I think they're funny. And I kind of appreciate that humor. But it is the ability to go into a professional setting and be able to communicate clearly. And we are graduating kids from high school. I just can't quite wrap my mind around how a school system can have children for 12 years, 8 hours a day, for, 160-something days a year. I haven't done the hour calculation on that, but for thousands and thousands of hours, we have children sit into a classroom and they can graduate from a high school with no verbal communication skills. Written is almost secondary. But when you get these kids and they are going out and seeking to start a professional life at age 18, now many kids graduate from Jackson Public Schools and go on to great success. They go to college. They go off to good, stable lives and raise families. Certainly that happens. But I don't know how any child, I don't know how one child is socially promoted through 12 years of school. All these hours that they spend in the classroom, and they get out and they cannot speak. They cannot carry on an adult conversation. The grammar is absolutely horrific. The understanding of words. Now, people may not think this matters, but I believe it does. If you are unintelligible in conversation, after 12 years of schooling, not to mention that the home should be teaching this too, but we are now several generations into this where grammar and communication is not really stressed. And so the parents aren't able to teach these things, but there are, I would imagine, at least 12 English teachers in every child's life that does not stop them and say, "You ain't got nairn," is not a way to express not having something. And they come out into the professional world, and let me tell you how this manifests itself. I had a lot of experience, particularly in my early career in the restaurant business. And we had front of the house and back of the house people. We had the hostess and the waiter staff that was out in the front of the house serving food and interacting with customers. And we had the back of the house staff that was mostly our cooks and dishwashers. And the front of the house is where the money was made. If you wanted to make money, go to a nice restaurant and get yourself a job waiting tables or bartending. You can make several hundred dollars a night. If you want to go back to the back of the house, you're going to be put somewhere very close to minimum wage to start, and you may get a few extra bucks an hour over the course of time. The deciding factor in an employer in a restaurant situation, and this is the same, I don't care if it's a bank, I don't care if it's the difference between being just somebody who has to sit in a cubicle and enter things into a computer or go out and be a salesperson. A good salesperson can make a lot of money. But if you can communicate with the public, you've got a million doors open to you. In the restaurant business, the difference between the front of the house and the back of the house was probably a 3X in pay, I would say at a minimum. And so anytime I would interview somebody that would come into the restaurant and I would consider putting them front of the house where they could make three times or what they could in the back of the house, or the back of the house was their communication skills, their presentation to the public. You cannot put somebody who is unintelligible in their communication in the front of the house communicating with customers. And so we saw so many people end up being back of the house people. And because nobody ever stopped them, nobody ever improved these skills. Obviously, none of the leaders of the community make this of any importance whatsoever. What I'm saying is it's just not even talked about. But there are a lot of kids that cannot even communicate. You know, I watched a documentary recently about Vince Lombardi. This is the coach of the Green Bay Packers. That's how we know him. But I was very interested to see his upbringing. He was of Italian descent. And apparently Vince Lombardi was very discriminated against as he was coming through college and then into coaching. He took some serious abuse. He was teased. He was discriminated against. He was ridiculed. He was made a second-class citizen. We don't think about that now because we don't really identify with discrimination against Italians here in this country now. But there was a time when, I guess, being an Italian was looked down upon. You know, it was very controversial that John F. Kennedy was elected president. People thought he couldn't make it because he was a Catholic. We had a lot of very odd discrimination things. But I bring up Vince Lombardi because I was surprised, number one, that there was this real anti-Italian sentiment here in this country at one point. But obviously he overcame it. The Super Bowl trophy is now named after him. And he became one of the greatest coaches of all time as a coach of the Green Bay Packers. And I will tell you, one of the reasons he overcame those things is because he had the tools to make that happen. You know, a lot of us think that all of these kids should just go out and live productive lives. They just need to go out and get a job. Well, we never stop and think about have we empowered them enough to get a job? And I'm telling you, the language skills of kids coming out of Jackson Public Schools, by and large, is atrocious. And so they are dooming them. This whole entire school system placing obviously no importance whatsoever on communication skills has doomed these kids to, in the restaurant example, back of the house work, minimum wage, low wage jobs for the rest of their lives, because the money is made in being able to present yourself to the public and interact with people who have money. And these kids are given no tools there. I applaud this minor league team for giving kids a chance to get off the streets and do something productive, play some sports, get into cheerleading, whatever it is that they're going to be offering. It's probably obvious that these kids need some good activities that focus them in positive ways, and they may find some kids and save some kids doing these programs. I absolutely love it. But, boy, are we whistling past the graveyard. I have actually approached school administrators, community college people, about a course about how to communicate in the professional world. There's very little appetite for it. And I don't know if it's because it's viewed as somehow condescending, judgmental. I don't know exactly what it is, but boy, if you cannot communicate, you want to help your child, I don't care what their grades are in high school, to be honest with you. I barely care if they even get a high school diploma. They should. That certainly means something to an employer that you at least completed high school. But if you can walk into a job interview and wow somebody with good grammar, clear, concise language, you will overcome a whole lot of other obstacles. And we are ignoring this one particular thing. It's amazing to me. If you cannot speak the English language in a clear, understandable, and grammatically correct style, you will miss out on huge opportunities in your life. And nobody's talking about it. It's the normalization of this lack of education. Now, I got to tell you, when you talk to somebody, grammar matters. I know I sound like an old man. I know it. I know. My mom forced this stuff on me. I wasn't thrilled when she did. But I tell you, when you talk to somebody, you can't tell me you don't make a judgment on somebody's intellect. And it may be unfair. There are plenty of smart kids out there, kids that had a lot of potential, could have achieved something, but they weren't given this most basic skill. You want to improve the lot of life of a lot of these inner city kids? Teach them how to speak. I'll be right back. Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard and melted, but we still have the radio. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYEB. Thanks for joining me today. So the Biden administration, and they gave Joe whatever the cocktail he requires to get through a few minutes of a speech. And I don't mean an alcoholic cocktail. I mean, they've got some kind of drug regimen that they inject, or he pops some pills or something like that to wake him up for 10, 15 minutes to be able to give a speech. I think this thing was about 18 minutes long. I've just got one clip of yesterday of Joe Biden coming out and addressing the gun violence in this country.
Memorial Day this past Monday, Jill and I visited Arlington National Cemetery. After Columbine, after Sandy Hook, after Charleston, after Orlando, after Las Vegas, after Parkland, nothing has been done.
Yeah, speaking of Las Vegas, that was a weird thing. I was on the radio during that time. 10 days in the news. I remember counting it and being really... 10 days in the news, the largest mass shooting. Well, I covered one yesterday where the federal government slaughtered 270-something Sioux Indians after they disarmed them. But outside of that... For some reason, that doesn't make the statistics. The Las Vegas shooting was the largest mass shooting in the history of the United States, I believe. It was 50 or 60-something people, wasn't it, were killed in this thing? It was a 10-day story, and then it just disappeared. Whatever happened with that? It's almost like the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. About 10 days of hardcore coverage, and then let's not pay attention to that anymore.
This time, that can't be true. This time, we must actually do something. We need to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And if we can't ban assault weapons, then we should raise the age to purchase them from 18 to 21. Strengthen background checks. Enact safe storage law and red flag laws. Repeal the immunity that protects gun manufacturers from liability. Address the mental health crisis, deepening the trauma of gun violence and as a consequence of that violence. These are rational, common sense measures. How much more carnage are we willing to accept? How many more innocent American lives must be taken before we say enough, enough?
Oh, and I know to a lot of people that was very inspirational. He's going to act. You know, I don't know. It's cold. It's a cold reality that bad things happen in life. And there are things that can be done. Parents can act to secure their schools from danger, and some are. There are viral pictures of dads that are arming up and standing outside of schools these days. There are certainly things. You can mitigate things. We constantly try to make things safer. But this determination by the Democrats, whether it's with gun violence or with COVID, that if they just do enough, if you just give them enough power, then all tragedies will be averted, is just absolutely insane. It ignores the reality that life can be cruel and that we're never guaranteed another day. This is a very cold view to a lot of people. Myself, my family has experienced tragedy. Your family has experienced tragedy. We have all experienced unexpected, tragic events during the course of life. They do happen. And if there's ways to mitigate the chances of those kinds of things happening, I do wear a seatbelt, not because a cop's going to pull me over and give me a ticket, because I believe it is probably a safety feature that I want to. I will probably be in car accidents, and I think I've got a better chance with my seatbelt on, so I put my seatbelt on. I don't need a cop telling me I have to. I'm not saying you don't take any action on these things, but you do not strip every single American of their rights. And they did the same thing with COVID. This idea that if they just do enough, and with all of the things they did, particularly in the blue states. I mean, I believe that the idea of giving politicians and bureaucrats more control with guns will be exactly like it was with COVID. The more control you gave them, look at the blue states that took the most drastic steps. They told you it was for your own good. You needed to give them this power to shut down businesses, to shut down churches, to shut down schools, to force masks onto people, and they had the worst outcomes. The more power these people have, the worse the outcome every time. But when we look at safety in this country, you know, people who die supposedly, I don't want to say supposedly, but, you know, unexpected deaths that we would like to see mitigated. What about tornadoes? We could build every single home to withstand a Category 5 tornado. It is possible to do. It would cost a fortune and result in a whole lot of people that are not in the harm's way of tornadoes, don't typically have them, or very, very, very rarely. But it would cost a fortune and put burdens on every American out there. But we could end the deaths from tornadoes right now, demand a basement, a fortified basement in every single house, because people die from tornadoes every year. I would imagine within the month of June, we will lose anywhere from few to dozens of people from a tornado. And enough could be done if we're willing to add about, $300,000 or $400,000 to the cost of every home. We could make every home tornado-proof and end the senseless deaths that are involved with these natural tragedies. What about diabetes? I did the numbers on this, too. And this probably is a cold segment. I mean, what happened to any child that is shot in school is such an incredible tragedy. But the idea that we must upend our entire society around these events, and I did the numbers again. I'm forgetting them right now. 56 million children go to school for 160 days a year. That's a lot of student days. Even when these tragedies happen, you have to understand how unbelievably rare they are, that the vast, 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 vast number of children go to school to and from safely throughout a school day without any gun violence at their school. Much more likely to be harmed or killed in the car on the way to or from the school. And on that topic, really, if we really buckle down, if we really dedicated ourselves, we could end the tragedy of auto accidents that take lives. And now every car will cost $1.5 million. And we will have to take away a lot of cars from a lot of people because those cars are not immune to crashes. But we could, I'm sure, with modern technology, create cars that are impossible to die in. NASCAR has effectively done that. They have horrific accidents at almost 200 miles an hour in a NASCAR, and these guys crawl out of it. So if we are willing to get the government to just fortify every car the way a NASCAR car is fortified, then maybe we can escape that. But diabetes, this is a disease, I got to tell you, largely of choice for a lot of people, for the type 2 diabetics. Now that really will be, that may feel a lot of harsh to people. Diabetes, type 2 diabetes is largely a lifestyle disease. Diabetes was the seventh leading cause of death in the United States in 2019. Based on the 87,647 death certificates in which diabetes was listed as the underlying cause of death. In that same year, in 2019, diabetes was mentioned as a cause of death in a total of 282,801 certificates. What I assume is that means that diabetes was a mitigating factor that led to the death of 282,000, maybe not the direct cause of the 87,000, but was a contributing cause to the death of 282,801 people in this country. Now, I know that this shooting down in Texas, all of these shootings, they really stand out. It was 19 children and 2 teachers. It is a tragic event. But when are we going to say enough is enough to the 282,000 deaths per year from a disease that is basically created by lifestyle choices? Do you not focus on the problem that is taking 282,000 lives before you focus on the issue that takes 19 kids' lives? Now, I know you can do both, but there's nothing being done about the 282,000 lives that are taken every year. We could go into the grocery stores. I could do it. I could become health czar here. And you just give me enough power. I will take everything off the shelves. I will stop every restaurant from serving every morsel of food that may spike your insulin levels, that leads you to be pre-diabetic and then diabetic and then possibly be one of these 282,000 people if you just give me enough power. I shouldn't be giving them any ideas, to be honest with you. I do an hour a week to educate you on ways to eat so that you do not become one of these 282,000 people who die of diabetes every year. My point being, this idea by the left primarily, that if you just give them enough power that all human tragedy can be stopped, it is ridiculous and it goes against all reality on planet Earth.
Wow. Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
All right, after the top of the hour, I got my regular segments of False Flag Friday, and then this week on the Crazy Train as we chronicle the world's descent into madness. So I don't have a whole lot of time now. I'm going to do a segment eventually about this woke culture. You know, it's Pride Month. All of the corporations are washing themselves in the rainbow flag. And this new flag they've got out, I don't know if you've seen this thing. It's got triangles, and there's got to be some kind of a subliminal message in it. I looked at it for a second yesterday, and I realized there's got to be something. It is bizarre looking. I mean, they've got just every kind of color on this thing. It's gone from just the regular rainbow. It's got hues of gray in there. I know they all mean something to somebody, but it's bizarre a world. But there is a reason why these corporations took this turn really about 10 years ago into this woke culture. And it is something that really I wish I had a show on the left to expose it to them, because they're the ones that really need to hear it. You're being had. This corporate virtue signaling. You are being tricked. And it's aggravating, you know, a whole lot of people. But the people on the left who think these big corporations are on their side, I certainly will do a segment blowing the whistle on that. It's Friday, so we'll do some fun stuff, I guess. I just found this interesting. The story was out the other day. Ordering takeout tonight, it might be a good idea to go pick it up for yourself. A new survey finds 8 in 10 food delivery workers admit to eating part of your customer's order. According to a poll of more than 500 delivery drivers commissioned by the Circuit Route Planner, stealing a customer's fries or putting their sticky fingers on someone's chicken may not even be the most disgusting thing happening on the way to your front door. Now, I will tell you, as economic woes get worse, you can almost think about it as a charitable contribution. That's what it should be. I'm going to tell you a story something that I saw in a restaurant recently. It was just kind of funny. And look, we are big supporters here of Take a Break Food Deliveries, and I can guarantee you that guy, the guy running it, who was a veteran and a locally owned service here, does not put up with a minute of that activity. So you might want to, you know, they've got local control of their drivers here. So you may want to opt for Take a Break Deliveries rather than some of the big chains that are trying to manage their drivers from San Francisco. But there was a woman the other day, was getting some food somewhere, and she saw the person's apron string touch her food. Freaked out. Absolutely freaked out. Wanted everything remade, and then eventually it left the place in disgust. She, of course, was wearing a mask. And she got out before I could really get her. But, boy, did I want to get her and say, do you ever order from a takeout, from a drive-thru? You ever go anywhere where you can't see the kitchen? If you want perfection and purity of your food, you better cook at home. And even then, I guarantee you, if you really pay attention, it's suspect. But I just thought this was a funny story. As the economy gets worse, this number will grow. So, yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Uh-huh. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. It's Friday, every Friday, 10 o'clock. We talk foreign policy here and the disaster that is the American empire that we have built. And I love talking to a right-wing conservative audience on this because you've been horrifically wrong, as I was. Let me explain. I was, too. I was, in the 1990s, in my youth, a Kool-Aid-drinking Republican warmonger. So I understand we've probably all been there at some point in our political life, including you Democrats out there who now suddenly love war. It's just amazing to watch. You love the big corporations. You love the big banks. You love the pharmaceutical companies. And you love the military-industrial complex. Congratulations, left. You've come completely full circle and abandoned one of the few great positions you had. But the right has been especially guilty of supporting the American empire to our great harm, I believe. Lots of stories. The march to World War III. Ukraine has admitted now that Russia is in control of 20% of its territory. Now, they could have signed a document long before this even happened. I keep saying it. Within an afternoon, this all could have been avoided. That would have ceded, I believe it was something like 10% of Ukrainian territory. There would have been no deaths, and the people that would have become independent, not even part of Russia, but independent in eastern Ukraine, 10% of the Ukrainian landmass would have just become independent because they're ethnically Russians and they want to be friendly with Russia, a buffer zone between Ukraine's hostile government and Russia itself. But they just chose not to do that. They're trying to march us towards World War III. Many stories on that front. And understand, when you hear these stories out loud here in the United States, obviously Russia, I mean, they knew about it before the stories came, but these are just basically advertisements to the rest of the world that we are provoking Russia at every possible turn. U.S. military has issued a stunning but perhaps not entirely unexpected admission that it has been conducting offensive cyber operations in support of Ukraine. Now, I just want to remind everybody of the pearl clutching at the Pentagon and with our political class here every time they mention Russian hackers. We believe Russia's responsible for this. Russia's responsible for that. We always act like we never do these things. We were just sitting here minding our own business, being a super friendly country, and those evil Russians launched a cyber attack against this or against that. But they have admitted now that we are actively complicit in offensive hacking operations against the Russians. NSA and U.S. Cyber Command Director General Paul Nakasone told the UK Sky News on Wednesday, quote, "We've conducted a series of operations across the full spectrum. Offensive, defensive, and information operations. This includes offensive hacking operations," he said. So remember that anytime there's charges of Russian hacking, which I'm sure they are guilty, from time to time, not in our elections, but I would imagine there are hackers in just about every single country on planet Earth out there messing around in cyberspace. But I would imagine that there is none more proficient at meddling in other countries' affairs electronically than the United States. Further provoking of Russia to create this conflict, to prolong this conflict until it flares up into something where the military-industrial complex can make some real money on. Despite a mere days ago, President Biden pledging in a New York Times op-ed that under his watch, the United States would ensure it avoids supplying the Ukrainians with weapons which could penetrate deep inside Russian territory, given the potential for a wider war with Russia, the White House is now said to be mulling the transfer of multiple MQ-1C Grey Eagle drones, which can be armed with Hellfire missiles. Reuters reports that the Biden administration has notified Congress of the potential sale within, quote, the coming days. If it goes through, the sale would mark the largest and most sophisticated drones in Ukraine's arsenal. Also inch the U.S. a bit closer towards President Zelensky's prior request for the U.S. and NATO to close the skies or impose a no-fly zone. Knowing at the Biden administration level, this will provoke direct conflict with Russia. This was also something part of the war propaganda. You want to talk about the U.S. military is admitting that they have engaged in offensive, defensive cyber moves as well as information operations. What could that possibly mean? Well, that's just a code word for propaganda. In Ukraine, there have been a lot of stories about those Russian animals in their invasion of Ukraine. Let me get up here to this story here. Over the past 2 months, an avalanche of stories have hit Western mainstream press, which purported to document instances of mass rape carried out by Russian troops against Ukrainian civilians. One particular story in Time took off, driving outrage and condemnation by Western officials and receiving repeat coverage on CNN and other major U.S. networks. It alleged, quote, a systemic, coordinated campaign of sexual violence. Relying chiefly on testimony gathered by Ukraine's appointed top human rights representative, included a particularly shocking story of 25 teenage girls being raped by Russian troops, 9 of which became pregnant. According to the report, Ukraine's human rights ombudsman, I don't want to pronounce this name, Ludmila Dinozova, said that 25 girls were kept in a basement in Bucha and gang raped. 9 of them are now pregnant. Elderly women spoke on camera about being raped by Russian soldiers. The bodies of children were found naked with those hands tied behind their back, their genitals mutilated. Those victims included both boys and girls. And it goes through this particular woman, this Ludmila Dinozova. She is the Ukrainian Parliament's Commissioner of Human Rights. She is the one that's behind all of these reports. And these stories are echoed in the mainstream media where they basically dehumanize Russian troops and call them basically animals. And here's the kicker. Recently, within the last couple of months, as investigators began to dig deeper into the allegations, it seems the media story started to dry up. The geopolitical analysis blog Moon of Alabama details what happened in the following. Here it goes. However, a bunch of eager NGOs in Ukraine, hoping for fresh Western money for new rape consultation and recovery projects, tried to find real rape cases. They were disappointed when they found that there was no evidence that any rape had taken place. On May 25th, a number of media outlets and NGOs published an open appeal to this Dinozova woman, calling for improved communication on sexual crimes during the war. The signatories insist that Dinozova should disclose only information about which there is sufficient evidence, avoid sensationalism and excessive detail in their reports, and they go through it, and it cannot be provided. They cannot find evidence of these things, these charges against the Russian troops. This reminds me very much of the Kuwaiti daughter of an official that came and talked about the babies being thrown from incubators in Kuwait. Never happened. She was an actress. Ukraine's parliament has now fired this human rights woman, Ludmila Dinozova. This is even in Ukraine's government. Their parliamentarians claimed her work focusing on the rape of Ukrainians by Russian troops, which, quote, couldn't be confirmed with evidence, and said it only harmed Ukraine and distracted the global media from Ukraine's real needs. So this woman has actually been fired from her own government for making up these stories about Russian rapes. That is part of the information operations that our military is talking about as well. You cannot believe what you hear from mainstream media. I'm not saying every Russian soldier out there is a saint. There's horrific things happen in war, and psychopaths are sometimes drawn to groups where they can kill and hurt people. But the idea of wholesale rape, this also harkens back to this Buka operation where we were treated to pictures of bodies littering the streets. The only problem is that video came out subsequent to that that showed some of these bodies miraculously standing up and walking away after the film was supposed to be cut. One body was laying in a gutter, and as the Ukrainian military convoy to document this massacre in Buka was rolling down the road, one of the bodies in the road realized his arm was a little close to where the trucks were going, so this body's arm withdrew to avoid being run over by a Ukrainian truck. Very interesting thing for a corpse to do such an activity. All right, when we come back, I'm going to give you my Fox News bash of the day. Brian Kilmeade and Jack Keane. There's a special place in hell waiting for these two guys. Wait till you hear them get going about Ukraine. Be right back. I will readily admit I have a bone to pick with Fox News. See, I don't like being duped. And Fox News really was that network that turned me into this disgusting, vile warmonger that I was in the early 90s. Of course, that was along with people like Bill O'Reilly, who I didn't realize at the time was basically just a blood-soaked psychopath. That's popular on conservative talk radio, isn't it? But Fox News sold me on the wars leading into the 2000s and into the Bush presidency until before I woke up and realized that we were getting nothing for this except death and mayhem around the world. Innocent people were being murdered. And as a pro-life guy, I don't say I'm not just pro-life for unborn American babies. I'm pro-life, pro-life. And I realized what we were doing. Fox News is not stopping. They are trying to keep conservatives on the march to war with Russia. They constantly, listen to Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity is basically foaming at the mouth about Russia. And yet he is still a darling because he loves Donald Trump. This was Brian Kilmeade bringing on one of our favorites at Fox News.
Right now, Fox News senior strategic analyst, retired four-star general Jack Keane. The general, they're just...
Now, wait, that was such a brief introduction of Jack Keane. He's a military analyst, strategic analyst, I believe is what they're referring to now. Because, see, you need strategy when you're involved in a war, even though we're pretending we're not. They leave off the part that Jack Keane has been serving on the board of directors of multiple defense contractors, up to and including today. He is a war profiteer, is what he is.
They're actually raising cities from afar because they don't have a weapon system to defend themselves. The Ukrainians are desperate. Do we have a system to give them?
Oh, yeah, we definitely do, and they've been requesting it. This is
probably one of the companies that he sits on the board of directors with, is sitting right by, ready to manufacture these things at great profit.
Referred to as multiple rocket launchers. We developed that capability in the 1980s and go about 20 or 40 miles, and then an advanced weapon can go about 100 miles. Today, we've got newer versions that go over 100 miles, and the most advanced version goes about 300. Here, what we've come down to here, and we've said it time and again, the Russian forces, their maneuver forces, their armor and their infantry are weak, poorly led, with low morale and improper training. And therefore, they're not decisive. But what is decisive is their artillery. And that has always been true from World War II to the present. Russia has lots of artillery, and they have longer-range artillery than what the Ukrainians did. So we've given the Ukrainians a lot of artillery, and it is helping them. Artillery kills artillery. So does air power and drones. But the fact is that they outgun Ukrainian artillery, and they want these multiple rocket systems so they can match the range that the Russians have. And these rocket systems are clearly quite devastating. And when you have drones that can find the enemy's artillery, even when it's not firing, and then use the rocket launch systems it will take down that artillery in a matter of seconds. And the fact that we've been dallying with this, I've been told again, out of fear that we're going to provoke the Russians. I mean, the Russians are going to go to war with NATO because we're providing Ukrainians a longer range artillery system than what they have. I doubt that seriously. We got to get on with support, and it looks like the administration is now moving in that direction.
He doubts that seriously, but he is willing to risk the lives of every Ukrainian on that bet. He doesn't believe that us sending long-range weapons to the Ukrainians to kill Russians is going to cause any problems. Russia won't have a problem with that. I ask the question again. What would we have done if we found out, not just found out, but that Russia was bragging about providing the Taliban with increasingly advanced weapons to kill U.S. troops in Afghanistan? What would we have done? Would that have provoked us in the slightest bit? I gotta say, I suspect so. But we expect the Russians to ignore it. We are continuing to be the greatest pirates on the sea as well, our foreign policy. They've seized a tanker of Iranian oil. We got the Greek authorities. I'm sure there was a few bucks involved in this. We've got vassal states all over the world, pretty much. You play ball with us, you go out and be our henchmen, or we cut off the funds. This is part of the foreign policy of the United States. Greece has seized an Iranian tanker because the United States determines. Somehow we have been given the authority by God to determine who can trade their natural resources with who. I'm not sure where we get that authority, but we've got it, and we have pirated another tanker of Iranian oil. Of course, Donald Trump was the OG in this piracy. He, during the Trump administration, we seized several tankers of Russian and Ukrainian, Iranian oil, Venezuelan oil. We hampered these people. And then we also left troops that are there up to and including today, I believe, in Syria right now, stealing Syrian oil. This is supposedly American foreign policy. Do you benefit from it? I don't know. Go to the gas pumps today and tell me if that's working out well for you. Couple other things here that I had to wrap up with. This is a guy, his name is Colonel Richard Black. And this is another message I would certainly like to get out to a conservative audience who largely is awake to this boondoggle that is the Ukraine war. Most people understand what's going on in Ukraine, that we have provoked Russia, that we've expanded NATO right up to their doorstep, that we have actually given weapons to the Ukrainian government full of Nazis. More about that in a second. A pretty funny story. We have given weapons to the Ukrainian government so they could murder ethnic Russians that are actually Ukrainians in their own country, ethnically cleansed. So most conservatives are awake to that, but they're still hell-bent on this idea that, but China's a different story. China we need to go after. This is retired Colonel Richard Black. He was the chief of the Army's criminal law division, just talking about, you know, wars and this idea of an aggressive Russia and China.
Let me just point out the illusion of Russian and Chinese aggression around the world. You'll hear this repeated many, many times that Russia is going to take over the entire world. China's taking over the world. They're doing all this stuff. If you look at the number of foreign bases between the U.S. and the U.K., we have about 900 overseas military bases.
And I believe 800 of the 900 are American.
This is where we have troops stationed in foreign countries. The total bases of the Russians and the Chinese, about 35. We've created this bizarre illusion because the war industrial complex must have enemies. You cannot manufacture weapons when you don't have enemies. And so we create this illusion that they're coming to get us. They're on our doorsteps. And the fact of the matter is that China is out to make a buck. They want money. The Belt and Road Initiative is very important, but they have a different paradigm. Our paradigm is we go into a country, we set up NGOs. We take over, you know, the government by coup. If we can't, then we just bomb the place to smithereens half the time. And you compare that with the foreign policy of China, which is you go in, you work with whatever government is there. You're not judgmental, but you make hard business decisions. You make investments. And I think for people who are comparing the foreign aid paradigm of the U.S. and China, they're saying, you know, my likelihood of surviving is much higher if I follow the Chinese paradigm. So we cut a single check to Ukraine that is as big as the entire military budget of Russia for a year. We fought multiple wars against Iraq. We fought in Somalia. We fought in Bosnia. We fought in Haiti. We fought in Kosovo, Afghanistan, Yemen, Libya, Uganda, Syria. I probably missed half a dozen wars that we fought. We fight everywhere.
It's quite stunning to think about just that. It's interesting the way he poses that. The United States, this air quotes here in the studio, capitalist country, we don't go around the world making deals, making business deals, even with bad characters to expand or to improve our standing in the world. That's the communist government uses dollars, yuan, I guess, for them. They go around the world making deals. The communist government is out making deals. The American supposed democracy, this bastion of freedom and the lovers of peace that we call ourselves, we're actually the ones out there invading and toppling governments. Wouldn't you just think in kind of intuitively, if you looked at one country that is supposedly free and capitalist and one country that is an authoritarian communist government, and you said, which of these countries is more likely to go in and invade and overthrow and unleash violence on other countries, and which country is more prone to go out and just try to do deals with countries for their advantage? You would logically think, the democracy, the capitalist democracy of the United States certainly would be the business people going around the world exerting their influence through business deals. And it would be those communists that would go in roughshod and bombing countries to smithereens because they have no regard for human life. They're communists. But the truth is actually quite the opposite. Isn't that bizarre? Interesting where we find ourselves, isn't it? And then this last story, I think it's a good transition into This Week on the Crazy Train. This was a story from the Times in the UK, Western media outlet. Azov battalion drops neo-Nazi symbol exploited by Russian propaganda. The Azov battalion has removed a neo-Nazi symbol from its insignia that has helped perpetuate Russian propaganda about their Nazi ties. So we've got the Western media praising the Nazis for a little bit of rebranding because the Russians, what they call propaganda, but it's actually just reporting, the Russians were actually pointing out that the people that they were fighting against in Ukraine wore swastikas and symbols of the SS from the Third Reich. Now the Azov Brigade, they feel like they're getting kind of bad press for being Nazis. So they've changed their insignia. They got a very pretty blue and yellow thing now. It's just three swords as opposed to the double SS lightning bolts that they had been wearing and the swastikas that they had been wearing. And the Western media applauds them for this rebranding because they say the Russians were exploiting their Nazi ties using in efforts with propaganda. And this is the topsy-turvy world we live in. Unbelievable. Be right back.
What's the frequency, can it this year been so drained?
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Friday, so we're wrapping up another week, putting another one in the books, and we do it the same way every week for the last 30 minutes, basically, and we are chronicling the world's descent into madness with this edition of This Week on the Crazy Train.
All aboard!
Now, we all are very aware that this is the beginning of National Pride Month. There's a lot of funny memes out there. There was one of a car where it talks about the corporate America, and it shows them kicking a Ukraine flag out of the car and letting the rainbow flag in. So they've changed our direction for this month. But I got to tell you, beginning of Pride Month, we weren't but a couple of days into it before CNN had to come in and spoil the party.
The CDC issuing a new warning now about monkeypox. All Americans, of course, can get the virus, but they're saying right now that the LGBTQ plus community should be especially cautious at the moment ahead of the Pride facilities coming, Pride festivities coming next month. The CDC is reporting many of the cases so far are among gay and bisexual men, though the disease can be passed to anyone.
You see that, guys? You've been following this Anthony Fauci. Now the guy's funding monkeypox stuff. He's going to unleash that on you, and he's did it right at the beginning of Pride Month. I'm telling you. This was COVID-related. Talk about crazy. It's still around. You know, we still get the occasional headline. I think most people have disregarded it outside of the duck people out there and the pointy N95 masks. Most people have moved on with their lives, but what I thought was funny about this clip was just the presentation. This is a local ABC News reporter. Her presentation was odd in the story to me.
There's a lot of COVID.
If it feels like you're starting to notice more people getting COVID-19 again, that's because they are.
I'm starting to see a lot of students be positive again.
Now, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in sales, if you've ever had a job where they tell you to smile and dial. And the talking point is, you know, people can hear a smile through the phone. This woman seems giddy. I mean, she's almost, I don't know, she seems especially enthusiastic about this new rise in COVID cases.
Like you're starting to notice more people getting COVID-19 again, that's because they are.
I'm starting to see a lot of students be positive again, coworkers that are positive, just contacts that are positive. It's not gone.
Experts say we're in the midst of yet another COVID-19 wave.
But at the moment, the cases are going up. Hospitalizations are going up. Test positivity is going up.
The cases are going up. Test positivity is going up. Maybe deaths will go up.
Health officials are keeping a close eye on right now is the United States is currently recording as many COVID-19 cases as it was last summer during the Delta surge.
We've really enjoyed a nice little break for a little while here, but unfortunately at the moment we're headed in the other direction.
That's why researchers are predicting cases to rise after gatherings this holiday weekend. They say when we have an opportunity like a holiday for people to get together, there's going to be risk for spread, especially right now. Doctors say the people most at risk for spreading and getting the virus, aside from anyone unvaccinated, are people who aren't boosted.
Anyone who has not been boosted for their vaccination should really start thinking about those boosters right now.
I don't know. It's just weird. She seems very giddy about the surge in COVID cases. She might be their COVID beat reporter, and her paychecks have taken a bit of a tumble over the past few months. The Biden administration, never too late for another bad decision.
And here in the U.S., the Biden administration is fighting to reinstate the federal mask mandate on planes and mass transit. That mandate was ruled unlawful by a federal judge in April. Now the Justice Department is asking an appeals court to bring back the mask mandate, saying it was easily within the CDC's authority.
What authority? What authority does the CDC have? I sure say, anybody out there vote for a CDC to have any authority over your life? I know I did not. So they're trying to bring back the mask mandate. We'll pick on Fox again. Fox has been right there with the COVID hysteria. They have been playing ball. They have a particularly objectionable, probably not the worst one out there on mainstream media, but what's this guy's name? Spiegel, maybe? Dr. Spiegel, something like that. He's on all the shows. He is their COVID czar over at Fox News. I got to tell you, they have got to, one of the problems they're having with this new COVID surge is branding. We need something sexy, something we can latch on to. The Omnicon, that was the latest one, but they've really started phoning it in ever since then. Listen to the title of this new variant that the Fox News medical contributor will tell you about. I just don't think it's catchy enough to catch on.
We talked about this, I think, yesterday, Doctor. Just an update on this contagious variant of COVID. It seems with each new variant, the contagiousness, if that's a word, continues to increase, but maybe not the severity.
That's what we're seeing, and I'm concerned about. The new variant is the BA.2.1.2.1.
That's not going to catch on. You know, everything is, you know, Howard Johnson's went to Hojo, all right? I mean, we are not all about that stuff. This variant title is not going to catch on.
I'm concerned about the new variant is the BA.2.1.2.1.
It's basically a software update. They're just updating COVID to make sure that the vaccines keep selling, I guess. Well, all right, on to Joe Biden here. Biden has done another one of the Dumbo drops. What's it called? Operation Fly Formula. another non-sexy, non-well thought out. Now we have the military. This is Joe Biden's America, is I guess what I'll call these next few clips. Joe Biden's America, where we are waiting for the military to deliver baby formula to our babies. And Joe Biden was there to announce the second one of these Operation Fly formulas. But the number of the amount of baby formula delivered was pretty disappointing.
Today, we're announcing the United Airlines has agreed to offer cargo space for Kendall NutriCare for the delivery of 3.7 bottles of the formula here in the States. I want to thank United Airlines for partnering with us to get this done.
Did you hear how many were delivered? Make sure you pay attention, moms out there, and you better get in line early for this one.
For cargo space for Kendall NutriCare for the delivery of 3.7 bottles of the formula.
Well, we got... We've harnessed the power of one of the largest airlines in the country, and Joe Biden's on the case. He's delivered 3.7 bottles of baby formula to the United States. That should fix it. Here's more of Joe Biden's America.
As we head into the summer season, the nation's power grid regulator is issuing a stark warning. Large parts of America could see blackouts in the coming months as climbing temperatures cause surging demand for energy. In its annual summer assessment, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation says that roughly two-thirds of the U.S. faces heightened risks of power outages, noting that the upper Midwest is facing a capacity shortfall, leading to a high risk of energy emergencies, while the entire western U.S. is at elevated risk of power outages in the event of spikes in energy use.
I guess we've never seen a hot summer before. How are these emergencies suddenly emerging? Joe Biden's America, ladies and gentlemen, two-thirds of the country in rolling blackouts in the summer months. Here is part of Joe Biden's America, but this is a stalwart case of urban decay. This was a little bit of a report about holiday fun. You know, last week was Memorial Day holiday. Everyone out there spending time with friends and family. This was the report from Chicago.
Calls for peace in Chicago over the holiday weekend went unanswered as shootings increased over last year. 48 people were shot in the Windy City between Friday and Monday. 9 of the victims died. This year's gunfire included 2 mass shootings on Sunday. Last year in Chicago, 37 people were shot over Memorial Day.
good times. Nothing more scary than Chicago than a long weekend, I guess. This was a fun one. Got a lot of press.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband has been charged with driving under the influence. Police picked up Paul Pelosi in Napa, California, Saturday night. He's since been released on $5,000 bail. Speaker Pelosi was on the East Coast at the time, a spokesperson saying she won't be commenting on this private matter.
Somebody had posted something. I want to make sure I attribute this to other people. I don't know who this was, but they said, I guess if I was Nancy Pelosi's husband, I would be drinking and trying to get away as well. If the power outages aren't enough, and if there were something like 2,500 flight cancellations, there was travel chaos over the Memorial Day holiday. But if that wasn't enough for you in Joe Biden's America, how about this one?
At least 4 people who parked their cars at Austin's airport got an unwelcome surprise when they returned from their trips. There were 4 complaints of stolen catalytic converters within 24 hours, and that number could go higher as people return to Austin and start their cars.
I definitely feel like I'm going to look into where else I can park.
Sam Yardo is heading to Cancun with friends. She's hoping her older Honda doesn't attract any unwanted attention while she's away.
They just got it fixed up for a bunch of money, so hopefully I don't have to go back to the shop after just getting it out.
The 2 vehicles most likely to get targeted are trucks because they're up higher off the ground and it's easier to get to the catalytic converter.
Also, Priuses are a likely target because they have two catalytic converters, so it's a bigger payoff.
Dope! Electric car generation. Another oopsie when it comes to electric cars. I got to take a break, but we got more clips from this week on the Crazy Train when we come back. Stick around.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will it catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the week. Let me remind you, if you're looking for somewhere to get some good, tasty food this weekend, check out Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. They are at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there by Germantown High School. These are 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas made the way you want them. You get to pick out the toppings, the whole deal. They also do pastas, paninis, salads, gelatos, beers, wines. Got a great brownie there, too, if you're a brownie fan like I am. You need to check out Your Pie. They've also got televisions. You're trying to catch a sporting event during the day. They've got trivia on Wednesday nights, too. I need to start pumping that. I had a big crowd out there this past Wednesday for trivia. It's a good time. This is a locally owned, veteran-owned business up there in Gluckstadt, putting out great food with a great staff. You definitely need to check them out. If you want to get it delivered to your house, make sure you only get it delivered through Take a Break Deliveries. That's takeabreakdeliveries.com. They are the only company that will deliver food from Your Pie. So if you want it at home, that's who you need to check out. Also, make sure that you get the Your Pie app. Just go to the App Store, look for Your Pie. You'll get all kinds of points for any purchases you make, which gets you all kinds of free goodies and meals and desserts, all kinds of good stuff. So download that app. You will be going back many times. Might as well get the points for doing it. That is Your Pie, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway Express, your inner pizza. All right, let's see what else we got for this week on the Crazy Train. Well, I guess this is insane, but not unexpected. It is actually very normal while disappointing.
Special Counsel John Durham's investigation into the origins of the FBI's Trump-Russia investigation suffered a major blow today. A federal jury found Michael Sussman, a lawyer with ties to Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign, not guilty of lying to the FBI when he brought them evidence of a possible link between Donald Trump and Russia. It was the first case to go to trial in the three-year investigation.
I'm sure Q has got a logical explanation to why this happened and why it's all part of the plan. Of course, it could be worse. We could be up in Canada. Justin Trudeau made some horrific announcements for his countrymen this week.
In Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government introduced legislation to put a national freeze on handgun ownership. The package would cap the market for handguns, making it illegal to buy, sell, transfer, or import them anywhere in Canada. Trudeau made the announcement surrounded by families of shooting victims.
But as a government, as a society, we have a responsibility to act to prevent more tragedies. We need only look south of the border to know that if we do not take action firmly and rapidly, it gets worse and worse and more difficult to counter.
Also included in Canada's new legislation, long gun magazines will never hold more than five rounds. The law is expected to be enacted this fall.
Now, you know, originally my reaction to that, I had it for a show earlier in the week, but never got around to it, was to tell all of the criminals, hey, head on up to Canada. They're sitting ducks up there, but sitting geese, I guess, would be the case for Canada. But then I ran across this story. As to be predicted, every time these gun control things come about, there is the big boomerang.
I'm not sure if it was intentional or not, but Mr. Trudeau and his government have become the best handgun salesmen in all of Canada. I have never seen activity at this level. Clients are calling. They're walking in. We have lineups. The phones are ringing off the hook. We can't keep up with the amount of demand there is right now because everyone is aware this is coming to an end. And for those that want to get one more handgun for their collection, they are looking to pick it up now.
Isn't that interesting that the greatest gun salesmen have been Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Justin Trudeau? Big swing and a miss. Climate hysteria is still out there and driving some people clinically insane.
At the Louvre in Paris, yesterday started as a normal day. Museum goers lined up waiting for their turn.
Yes, this is NPR, and I guess I need to rethink my entire style here at WIAB. If this is what goes for national-level news on NPR, the NPR voice.
Turn to take a look at, maybe snap a photo of Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa.
Suddenly, a man disguised as an old woman jumped out of a wheelchair. Shocked bystanders watched as he threw a piece of cake at the bulletproof glass protecting the painting. As security guards are escorting him out, he yells in French, "Think of the earth. There are people who are destroying the earth. Think about it. Artists tell you, think of the earth. That's why I did this."
Yeah, there you go. Another climate hysteric driven insane by our political class. Let's see what else we got time for here. Oh, here was a fun one. Here's a fun one. A record number of freshman students at San Francisco's elite Lowell High School earned D and F grades this past fall, the first semester after the school board eliminated merit-based admissions that were deemed racist by former San Francisco Board of Education Commissioner Allison Collins. Of course, she was ousted along with two other school board members in January because of such horrific proposals. Of the 620 freshman students at Lowell, 24.4% received at least one D or F during the fall semester, which compared with just 7.9% of first-year students in the fall of 2020 and 7.7% in the fall of 2019. You know, these liberals are actually setting these kids up to be embarrassed and to fail miserably at these schools. They've gone from a 7% D's and F's to 25% D's and F's because they got rid of the merit-based admissions. Another swing and a miss. That's all the time I got. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. I'll see you on Monday.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.